Well, good afternoon. I'm excited to be here as the session cleanup hitter to talk about a project that I worked on here with a big team, as you can see from all the names on this slide. So this was a group of agronomists, economists, and sociologists at Iowa State University. We worked on a project where we focus grouped some farmers, so I think this is a nice follow-up to the presentation that we just heard. It's less about how we manage them, but more about farmer perceptions and challenges and barriers with some of the major things that we wanted to try to get at in this focus group project. And we thought that there were some neat results that we could share for the cover crop research community and that this was a good venue to do that. So I'll start by talking a little bit about how those focus groups worked. So there were four focus groups that we held around the state of Iowa last summer. They lasted for about 2 hours long, and about 30 minutes of the presentation, or 30 minutes of that time, was presentation from the research group. And I'm going to tell you a little bit about the information that we shared, because that definitely shaped the questions that we asked and then the results that we saw. So some of the information that we presented to the farmers was really geared at getting them thinking about it, or trying to understand if we presented a long-term view of cover crops, if that might help offset some short-term producer concerns. So the first information that we presented was data from a long-term research site in central Iowa. It's a corn-soybean crop rotation that's been managed with a winter eye cover crop for more than a decade. So it's a nice long-term study looking at yield impacts, cover crop biomass, water quality, so how much nitrate was retained on the field compared to a control. We also shared data from the Iowa Learning Farms, Practical Farmers of Iowa, information I know that Stefan presented about a little while ago in this session. So they shared that data with us, and we aggregated it for the sites that had 4 to 5 years of data. And we did that for these two points because, we really wanted to present the best available long-term data that we had for Iowa. And in the research community, that is for cereal rye. And we know that we're starting to do a lot more work on other cover crop species in Iowa, but that was what we had the most long-term data for. And I'll also share here that in these two pieces of information that we shared with the farmers, there were, in some years and at some locations, statistically insignificant yield declines following a cover crop. Okay, so that's going to be important. I'll just let that sit for a second. When I show you our results, that becomes important. We also presented some results from modeling work that we were doing in my lab group to try to put numbers against questions like how much carbon could you accumulate over time, how much erosion could you prevent, so again, the long-term environmental benefits. And we also presented a really basic economic fact sheet, a balance sheet, I should say, with information about costs for seeding, termination costs, also how much cost share might be, and a first attempt to put some numbers against what it would look like if you were paid for that erosion that's prevented or the nitrate that's retained on your field. Okay, so just a quick snapshot of who were our farmers. So we recruited farmers from existing networks, from groups like Iowa State Extension, NRCS, Practical Farmers of Iowa, and our goal was to try to get in those focus groups farmers who were experienced with cover crops as well as those who hadn't yet used them. But as you can see from the familiarity of cover crops, we ended up with a group of farmers who were more familiar with them, and it's kind of a self-selecting thing that you're more likely to go to something that you're learn more about something if you're already familiar with it. So nonetheless, we still had some really rich discussions with our farmers and helped us achieve the goals that we set out to find. Okay, so what did we find? So this is a quick look at the top 10 themes of the conversations that we had with the farmers. And I will share, while I have this up so you can digest it, that the focus groups were recorded with participant consent. They were transcribed verbatim. They were then put into the InVivo 10 software, which really nicely and easily allows you to group conversations by theme. They were coded by three members of our research team, myself, my colleague Rebecca Clay, a fellow agronomist who's here with me today, and Gabrielle Rush McNally, who's a sociologist. So the three of us coded it. We had a coding structure for themes based on the questions that we asked and the data that we talked about, as I've already shared. And so this is what we ended up with. So you see the relative number of times that these issues were discussed. And what's interesting, as you've already seen on the last two presentations, right, that the number one theme that came up in our focus groups was that barrier related to cover crop establishment. So I have this the top 10 themes grouped by barriers and facilitators, because that was an important piece for us to try to see really what are the challenges that farmers have, and then what are the facilitators, what are the benefits that are helping them to use them. So cover crop establishment, especially for this part of the Midwest where corn soybean is the predominant land use, there really is not a lot of time after corn and soybean harvest before it gets cold and winter sets in, and that there's enough time to establish a plant such that the costs of doing that are worthwhile. So that came up quite regularly, as you can see. The second most frequently discussed barrier was that of cover crop termination. Interesting for us the way that those two things shook out, that establishment did turn out to be a more frequently discussed topic. And then, as you can see, probably no surprise, the number one and number two facilitators or benefits that were discussed were erosion control and general soil health benefits. And a couple other interesting things that I want to mention here related to our top 10 themes is that it might look like some of these barriers are similar to our facilitators, and the way that we coded this is based on the context of that conversation. So if one farmer was talking about, I don't have enough time to get my cover crop seeded, another farmer might respond and say, oh, well, I follow my combine with the drill, and that's how I make it work on my farm. So some of these were discussed in the context of how farmers are successfully managing the cover crops. And the other thing that I want to mention is that we separated our barriers into two different categories because, and the farmers didn't necessarily articulate it this way, but we often felt that there was this tension in the way they described their challenges with cover crops. And this is kind of the nice thing about a qualitative analysis like we did, that we could get more rich into the conversation with the farmers, that there were clear separations between those kinds of barriers that were just purely nitty-gritty agronomic management, this is how I have to do it on my farm, and then things that were more systemic in nature, so more broadly related to the infrastructure of production in the region, and that's what I have here in the system level barriers. And we know that these are certainly interrelated, right? That because corn and soybeans are the predominant cropping system, and we have that as a system level barrier here, that establishment is difficult because of that. So we recognize that these are intertwined, but we really think that this is a critical distinction that we can learn from this kind of discussion, because what we heard from these, you know, more conservation-minded farmers was that even though we believe in the soil benefits of doing this, it's still really a challenge within the confines of what we have. So let me show you a few quotes to, everyone loves farmer quotes, to try to illustrate some of these themes for you. So really quickly about farm level barriers, this first one has been beaten to death already by myself and others as you see, so establishment concerns that there just isn't enough time after harvest, not everyone has that time. And the second one about yield drag. So this is a place where we learned that farmers think differently than scientists do, that even if we carefully explain that there's not statistical differences, if they see those differences on the sheet, then this was a big topic of conversation in multiple of our focus groups. And so the quote here, I have not tried cover crops on soybeans going to corn, and probably for obvious reasons, it's at least a five, it could be a five bushel decline, so that gives me a bit of a concern. So, like I said, we think differently than farmers do in this, that statistical significance still could mean, insignificance could still mean something to the bottom line. And then I'll show you two quotes here related to those things that we grouped more as system level barriers. And the first related to the broader cost of production and also land tenure in the state. And the other thing is, and somebody mentioned it, it's long term and you deal with the people, you know, that most of Iowa's or a great percentage is rented. And it's really tough to put something on rented ground and spend another $45. So yeah, this idea that if it's not your land and you're not going to be farming it in another year or two, then what is it worth spending that money on is an important consideration that was addressed by some of the participants in our focus group. And then this next one, kind of more broadly related to just the infrastructure in the state for this practice. One of the things we were missing is the infrastructure for the average guy. You had to work with maybe a third-party vendor you knew nothing about. You did not know what you needed to be planting, and so as we start integrating cover crops into like a corn-soybean mindset. So you can see, yeah, that there's not, for the average guy, maybe a lot of familiarity with who to go to for different elements of getting this done on your field. Okay, and I'll close with two more quotes from our about overcoming barriers to really, I guess, illustrate the innovative spirit of some of our farmers. And this is something that we heard a lot of sentiment from some of our farmers about the need for a long-term outlook. And I think the cover crop really served as the kicker to get me thinking differently about really farming in general and to start thinking about something other than yield. If your medium is gone, there's no point in farming, even if you're, I mean, giving up 5 bushels in 1 year, but you could be giving up your entire way of living in short order, 40 years maybe. So that's a great quote, right? So just to get us sort of thinking beyond just the yield and your economic return in 1 year. And then finally, this is, I think, a really neat point too, this idea that it really does take a coordinated effort to get the cover crop management right. I look at it as a system. You gotta do the whole system. You can't nitpick. You gotta manage your nitrogen. You gotta get good seed-soil contact because you're planting into a massive root sometimes, and it's you need to do everything. Just to do one piece, people get, it doesn't work, they get discouraged, and they say that's no good, and they're not gonna do it anymore. You need to do everything. That's well said, and a nice segue into our concluding thoughts that we wanna share with this audience. So what have we learned from some of our early cover crop adopters? And this first point being that this perception of yield impacts is out there, right? And there's more data. Two of our colleagues on this project, Jay Arbuckle and Gabrielle Rush McNally, have a new paper out in the Journal of Soil Water Conservation, and they analyze data from the Iowa Rural Farm and Life Poll and from a broader survey, bigger than our focus group. They see that a negative predictor of cover crop use is an association with some of these perceived risks. So being realistic that this perception is out there, that's our first point. The second one, that last quote about it being a system, right, that managing a cover crop, even for these conservation-minded farmers, still takes intentional effort. And as we've done this analysis and discussed sort of the broader narrative around cover crops, we see that, or we felt that there's often this, you know, excitement around them because it's an easy, or perceived to be easy, not something that's taking land out of production, but even, again, from the conservation-minded farmers, that this is something that does take work and intention. And part of the reason that it is not simple is because of some of these system-level barriers, so it seems to us that this does really beg questions that are policy-related beyond just, getting the settings right on your planter or things like this. So policy solutions that require us thinking longer term or maybe introducing more diversity that would make it easier to do practices like cover crops. With that, I'll open it up to questions. Thank you.
Any questions for Andrea?
Sure. Right. I'm not personally working on that, but I know that those conversations are happening, and I don't exactly know within what context. I don't know, Sarah, if you want to jump in and answer that, or?
Practical Farmers is a strong legacy program right now, matchmaking and just helping those renters go after landowners, like woo them by the production system they're doing, and also think about how that rental agreement should be structured, who pays for the cover crop, working with farm management companies also to think about incentivizing those tenants to incorporate those conservation practices and reward them for it. But it needs to be done so much more.
Okay, any other questions? Before, Sarah has one.
Well, this is another question, but I can't believe they recognized how tied they are to corn and soybeans. I mean, in the middle of the barrier is corn and soybeans. They said it.
Right. And those were definitely more diverse farmers.
Right.
There was definitely this tension. I mean, you know, we didn't bring up anything related to regulation or policy, but, you know, some echoes of just, and again, it was surprising to us, too, to hear even the, you know, the most conservation-minded farmers, people that you guys work with at PFI saying, you know, we just don't see how this is going to happen if there's not some kind of regulation. They just are really kind of, they don't see a path for making their neighbors or other people do it unless they're told to do it. And that's their words, not ours. So, yeah, definitely the tension of, like, we want to do this, we know it's important, but we don't see how it scales up.
So one strategy you use with that person to convince them they should?
I mean, I think, yeah, emphasizing the benefits that they can get from it, and maybe just trying to have a conversation about what is their operation, what are the opportunities in their management. I would definitely say connect to a farmer who's already doing it, right? I mean, that's, you know, there's definitely, yeah, and this will be in the some of the publications that come out of this, a strong need to connect farmers with other farmers who are already doing it so they can see what is happening. I mean, there was a lot of rich conversation, even amongst farmers who were doing it. I mean, they'd go off on 20-minute tangents just talking about equipment, right, because they're trying to learn from each other, and that was good. We wanted to get them sharing information. So I would say try to emphasize the benefits and then maybe try to connect them to a network of people who can show them better than I could as a scientist.
Okay, before we thank her, and I still have your attention, a few announcements. Last chance to sign up for CEUs if you're certified crop advisor, soil scientist, soil classifier, agronomist. Two, there's the business meeting for this community at 3 o'clock in this room. And then third, we have poster session. The presenters will be there 4 to 6 this afternoon. So with that, thank you, and let's thank our speaker.